I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. When Amazon's Jeff Bezos floated the idea of drones delivering packages to customers on 60 Minutes last year, many people rolled their eyes. Well, earlier this summer, Amazon asked permission from the Federal Aviation Administration to test its drone delivery system they're calling Prime Air. So far, the agency hasn't ruled on new regulations for the commercial use of drones. It's supposed to do that next year, which means it's a very good time to discuss safety, security, and surveillance issues related to the domestic use of drones. And let me introduce our two guests. Jay Stanley is a senior policy analyst with the ACLU's Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project, also editor of the ACLU's Free Future blog, and he joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Jay Stanley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for inviting me on.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Gregory McNeil, joining us by telephone, law professor, Pepperdine University School of Law, also a contributor to Forbes. And Greg McNeil, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning. It's nice to be back.
Nice to have you back. And Greg, to you, are we already in the age of domestic drones? Is it here?
I think we're at the dawn of the drone era, I like to say. The technology is now really starting to take off. We're starting to find a variety of uses as scientists, innovators sit around and think of great ways to use this technology. There are a variety of examples, from things that protect the environment to things that benefit news journalists, and of course those things that benefit law enforcement. And so there really are a lot of opportunities, and the question is, going forward, are we going to allow innovation? Are we going to allow people to develop new uses for the technology, or are we going to restrict it before the technology can really be used for its greatest benefit?
And Jay, would you say that technology is really outpacing whatever rules and regulations are already in place or under construction when it comes to domestic drones?
Yeah, definitely. The FAA has been going very slowly on permitting the use of drones in the skies. And as a result, the technology is just going forward through leaps and bounds. And there's a lot of pent-up demand for use of this technology by police and by the private sector. And of all the sort of potential surveillance technologies that we've seen come down the pike in recent years, drones is somewhat unique in this respect, in that the FAA, by holding back the deployment of it, has created a space for a large conversation about the surveillance implications of it.
And why do you think the FAA is taking so long? Is that a good sign?
Well, I think they're worried about safety, and that's their main mandate. And there has been a lot of controversy about privacy. I mean, there's been an incredible outpouring of interest and concern over the privacy impacts of this technology. And, you know, the airspace and the airspace rules are incredibly complicated, as I've learned in recent years looking into this issue. And they have to figure out how to integrate this technology with manned aircraft and so forth. We can't have drones colliding with passenger aircraft or plummeting through people's roofs, obviously. We don't know anything about airline safety or air protection. We don't have a dog in that fight, but when it is unrolled out, we just want to see some good privacy protections
in
place.
And I do want to talk about the privacy issues. Back to you, though, Greg, and even this issue of the FAA and safety. I mean, their job is to make sure the airspace is safe, and there was a report, I think, last week at LAX, a Canadian airline saw a drone at about 400 feet. Obviously, some concern about drones being too close to things like airports. Do you have safety concerns when it comes to drones? Do we have Greg McNeil? We seem to have lost him.
Hello?
Greg, do we still have you?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm not sure if you heard my question or not.
I did hear your question,
okay.
Marty. So, you know, my concerns, of course everyone's concerned about safety. I think when you look at when you look at the potential for people who act irresponsibly to cause harm to others, that's something that we should be concerned about. But we also run the risk here of the problem being overblown. So you mentioned the LAX example. The LAX example was a drone that was flying 10 miles from the airport. So if you draw a line 10 nautical miles from every airport, do it in Philadelphia, do it in New York City, and then draw a circle around that, we're really far from the airport. So the problem with that drone was not that it was over flying over LAX, as the news headlines made it seem. It's that it was at 4,000 feet and 10 miles from the airport. So the person operating that drone was operating it in an irresponsible manner that would be illegal under model aircraft guidelines that say operate these aircraft below 400 feet. And so we have existing laws that prohibit that type of conduct within what was known there as Class B airspace. The airspace over airports, just to give your listeners an idea, is a series of concentric circles. And when you're immediately above the airport, it's prohibited. When you're within a few miles of the airport, there's a ceiling at which aircraft are not allowed to fly above. And the further you go out from the airport, the higher that altitude limitation gets until you get outside of Class B airspace, and there are very few limitations. That's actually important as we think about these laws, because the laws that we might want to have in downtown LA or Philadelphia or New York City are very different from, let's say, the laws that you might want to have over a ranch in Nevada or Texas, where you're using a drone to monitor your cattle, or where you're using a drone to determine how many pesticides or how much fertilizer you're using for your crops. And so the distinctions about geography actually become somewhat important, and I think they even become important for our discussion about privacy. Our expectations of privacy might change based on overflights of certain types of property in congested areas versus in more rural areas.
Well, Jay, let me go back to you and just picking up on what Greg just said. I mean, do we need uniform rules for the commercial use of drones across the country, or should there be exceptions made depending on what those drones are being used for and where they're being used?
Well, we, the ACLU, have called for, preferably uniform rules governing law enforcement and government use of drones. We'd like to see some basic protections in place governing when and under what circumstances law enforcement deploys drones, how they treat the video that they collect, who has access to it, how long they retain it, auditing and effectiveness tracking, and so forth. And a number of states, 13 so far, have passed drone regulations. And we would ideally like to see that done at the federal level in terms of law enforcement. When it comes to the commercial use of drones, we have not actually called for any kind of rules or regulations on privacy or anything else at this time. There are certainly significant privacy implications from the commercial use of drones and the private use of drones. There are some existing laws that would apply, such as Peeping Tom laws. If you fly a drone up and look in a third floor bedroom window, that's probably covered by most states' existing Peeping Tom laws, for example. But we do want to preserve space for innovation in the private area, and also the First Amendment comes into play, which obviously we at the ACLU care a lot about.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, is it any different, though, using, let's go back to the law enforcement example, using a drone versus using a helicopter or using cameras, which police departments use on a pretty regular basis?
Yeah, no, that's a good question that I'm often asked. We've had helicopters for many decades, and what's really that new about drones? And I think there are a couple parts to the answer. Number one, police helicopters can invade privacy. We had an incident in New York City where a police helicopter was supposed to be monitoring a rally, and the camera swung over and videotaped a couple making love on a pitch black rooftop where they thought they had privacy using night vision, and watched them for like 8 minutes. So police helicopters can invade privacy, but it hasn't really been a big problem because police helicopters are expensive. They cost millions of dollars. They're very expensive to operate. They have to have shifts of workers. Whereas with drones, when a police department, now or in coming decades, can put literally hundreds or even thousands of them up in the air for pennies per minute, the sort of natural limits on surveillance, on aerial surveillance that have always existed because of the expense of police helicopters are eroded. So we're really looking at a situation where quantity can change the quality of surveillance.
To you, Greg, more drones, more surveillance, do you see it that way?
So in the short run, I think that what we're looking at when we talk about drones, and I think it's important that we clarify what we're looking at when we're talking about drones. The FAA's regulations basically say 55 pounds and down is a small unmanned aircraft system, and above that is a large unmanned aircraft system, or you could call it small drone or large drone. But within that space, a small drone is something hobbyists use, these sort of two-pound drones called Phantoms. The police departments are looking at, they're basically remote control helicopters. They're called, AeroVironment makes one called the Cube, or big remote control airplanes that weigh about 10 pounds. And these systems currently have like a 30 to 45 minute battery life. And each one requires an operator. So someone is standing and operating it. So for each drone that you would add in, you would need an operator for that. And so in the short run, the fears that Jay has articulated that I agree with, the fear of a persistent surveillance down the road where there are drones everywhere, is so far off in the future that it's almost odd for me to see us having legislation that is driven to try and prevent persistent surveillance when the technology is so far off. I also have a problem with the way that some advocacy groups are pushing legislation to try and prevent that fear, but they're focusing on drones instead of focusing on the fear of persistent surveillance. And so the legislation will say no drones may be used to surveil people without a warrant, instead of saying no aerial surveillance without a warrant, which would take account of helicopters, but also blimps and persistent sort of things that sit above in the air above towns and other things, which I know the ACLU has opposed in other initiatives, but it's odd to me that in all the state legislatures, we have a very technology-specific prohibition that just goes after drones. And that's a bad way to write legislation, because it only captures one potential harm, and I say potential because that harm isn't even here yet, versus a myriad of other ways of actually more efficiently achieving that surveillance goal. You can surveil so much more with a helicopter or with a larger system that can carry larger payloads. And so I think that the it's sort of a drone fetishism where the technology is in the news and we go after it. And if we just I hate to give credit to this argument, but if we just referred to the small drones that law enforcement wants as remote control helicopters, it wouldn't be a headline. If the local sheriff's department wants a remote control helicopter, nobody would be afraid of that. But a few people, sorry, Jay. I think when we call it a drone, it captures people's attention, which is good if you're advocating for legislation, you're trying to get people's emotions involved, but I don't think it's good for good legislation.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Greg McNeil. He's a law professor, Pepperdine University School of Law, also a contributor to Forbes. Jay Stanley with us as well, senior policy analyst with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project. He's also editor of the ACLU's Free Future blog. And we're getting some opinions about drones and about policing drones. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. How do you see them? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Longs Park Amphitheater Foundation supports WHYY and presents the 36th Annual Longs Park Art and Craft Festival. This fine art and craft show will be held rain or shine Friday, August 29th through Sunday, August 31st in Lancaster's Longs Park. 200 fine artists and craftspeople will display an array of jewelry, apparel, paintings, ceramics, mixed media, and more. Wine, craft beer, artist demonstrations, and an art raffle are planned. Tickets and details online at longspark.org.
Hi, I'm Terry O'Reilly. Eric Weinmayer has climbed Mount Everest, and he's planning to paddle the white water of the Grand Canyon, and he's been blind since the age of 13. Eric Weinmayer on Pushing Boundaries and Perceptions, coming up on Cue the Summer from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel has promised decisive action against Islamic militants in Iraq.
We are pursuing a long-term strategy against ISIL because ISIL clearly poses a long-term threat.
We'll speak to military analyst Andrew Bacevich about what those strategic options are next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscone, talking with Jay Stanley and Greg McNeil about some of the privacy and security issues related to the domestic use of drones. And again, we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Jay, I want to give you a chance to respond to what Greg said before the break, and I'll just add this tweet from Peter, who says there are no privacy concerns that don't already have an adequate remedy in the law. Do you agree with that?
I do not agree with that. Basically, there is no privacy protection from aerial surveillance under the way the Supreme Court has interpreted the Fourth Amendment. The police can fly over your backyard even if you have a high fence around it and you're lying out there sunning yourself, and they can take photographs from the air, according to the Supreme Court. The court has never ruled on drones, which may change the way the court looks at things because of, the sheer quantity and persistence of the surveillance that can be done as opposed to an airplane flying over, which was what they ruled on. But it's a little bit of a wild west out there when it comes to privacy protections from drones. There are some existing laws, as I said, but not enough to protect us in the face of this new technology. And it's true, as Greg made some very good points, and I think that it's true that the kind of mass surveillance fears that we have are somewhat far in the future, although we do see, and we have seen an attempt by the mayor of Ogden, Utah, to put a blimp up over a city and basically engage in 24/7 surveillance. There's a private company out of Ohio called Persistent Surveillance Solutions, which flies a manned aircraft over a city using super high resolution photographs and basically photographs a 25 square mile area constantly, and can track where all the vehicles and pedestrians in that area go. So the technology is here. The policy framework, it's true, I think it's a long time down the road before we have autonomous, in other words, drones that are not being guided by individual pilots. But that day will come, and there's nothing wrong with getting ahead of the technology for once and putting in place some good common sense privacy protections.
Well, Greg, I'm looking at a piece that you wrote, and this is almost a year ago, but the Federal Bureau of Investigation has actually used drones to support their operations, as has ATF, the DEA, the United States Marshal Service. I mean, it seems that this stuff is already being used even before there are any rules, guidelines, or even the FAA weighing in on the commercial and domestic use of drones.
Right. So so when we talk about, we should distinguish the types of drones that we're talking about, and also the types of the agencies that are using them. And so this, the example you gave, is a really illustrative one. When we talk about the FBI or Customs and Border Protection, Homeland Security using drones, the drones they're using are like the predators and reapers that we've seen from the battlefield, except they're not armed. So flying at these are the equivalent of, like, they're the size of a Cessna or larger. And they're real aircraft. I mean, if you saw it flying in the sky and you weren't an aircraft expert, you would just think to yourself, that's a real airplane. And that type of aircraft has really advanced capabilities. But as Jay mentioned, with regard to Persistent Surveillance, the company in Ohio, the capabilities of that drone are very similar to the capabilities of what a manned aircraft would be capable of doing, right? So it's so large that it can carry big cameras and engage in the types of persistent surveillance that many people might be concerned about. And so those drones, I guess, are controversial to some people, but when you see hobbyists and other people, commercial users wanting to use drones, they really want the smaller 55-pound and other drones. So the Amazon drone won't have a camera on it. If it does, it will be a camera that helps it, like, figure out how far it is from the ground. It would be navigational. And they're looking at a drone way under 55 pounds. And so we have to be careful not to conflate the different types of technologies. And so when law enforcement is looking to get drones, most of your local police departments cannot afford the Predator and Reaper, which are, we're talking millions of dollars, versus local agencies might buy something for under $10,000 with a 45-minute flight time. And so it's the challenge here is trying to figure out the right lexicon to discuss these things. And I do want to say a few things about some of the legal points that, that Jay mentioned. One of the interesting things is that while the Supreme Court has said that you have no Fourth Amendment protected privacy right in that which is gathered from the air, they did leave a carve out there where it was that if the aircraft was in navigable airspace. So there's this interesting space now from about 500 feet down to the ground where for about 60 years there have been no developments in the law, largely because we haven't had any cases on it. And so I think if we find the police flying a drone over your yard under 500 feet, and it starts to interfere with your use of the property, we might start to see the Supreme Court or other courts saying that's actually a violation of your privacy rights. I think that's a possibility. It also will come about where people might start to say that's a trespass on my property. So if your neighbor does it and flies over your property, not only would you have peeping Tom laws, but you might have trespass at lower altitudes. Certainly below 100 feet, I really think you'd, or below treetop height, I really think you'd start to see people winning lawsuits against those who operate below treetop height over their property.
I mean, Jay, would I be able to shoot that drone down? Let's say it's 100 feet over my property. Is that within, would I be within my rights, or has the law not ruled yet on that?
I think that you'd be violating FAA rules if you shot anything that's in the air. Greg mentioned the FBI, and I think that one of the problems that we're seeing with government use of drones is excessive secrecy. I mean, this is a brand new technology that is, you know, creating broad concern and discussion across the political spectrum. We're trying to figure out how to integrate it with our existing laws and our existing infrastructure. And yet we see the FBI being incredibly secretive about how it's using the technology. We're seeing other agencies being incredibly secretive. The FBI finally produced a privacy impact assessment, which they're required to produce by law, and they refused to release it. By law, they have to provide a written explanation why they won't release it, and they won't release that written explanation. The military is refusing to release data on its domestic drone accidents. There was a 375-pound drone crashed into an elementary school playground in Pennsylvania, and they wouldn't wouldn't comment on it. There was a Boeing 767 size drone that crashed in Maryland. So this is a time where we should be seeing open government and government being honest and open about how it's using this technology. And in fact, we're seeing just the opposite.
Well, Jay, and I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but since there's been so much discussion about the militarization of the police as a result of the demonstrations in Ferguson, are you concerned? I mean, we're talking about drones here, that we might see that within drone technology?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Greg mentioned the fetishism of drones, which is a point I don't agree with him on. I think that this is a very real surveillance, very powerful surveillance technology coming into American life. And like many other technologies, it's something that we are seeing as part of the, you know, what's been called the green to blue pipeline. Technologies moving from the military to the police. It's true, as Greg said, that a lot of these drones are small, remote toy helicopters almost, but we've also seen the large giant jets that are being used by Customs and Border Patrol along the southern border and northern border in some cases being loaned to police departments. I think that it is part of the militarization of police, and more broadly a part of an entire wave of really new high technology that's coming into our lives. And I think that that's part of why state legislatures and others around the country have fixated on drones, because they're very concrete. You talk about data mining on the internet, and it's a very abstract way of privacy being invaded. This is something that's very concrete. It represents the overall high-tech revolution that we're living in. And the other reason we're seeing drones being picked up on to such a remarkable degree in the state legislatures is that it's truly a bipartisan issue. Almost all of the drone legislation that we've seen around the states, there's currently 36 states that are considering legislation this session, have been proposed either by Democrats and Republicans together or by Republicans. So I think that that's part of the scene that we're seeing.
Well, we are talking about the commercial or domestic use of drones. And again, that's Jay Stanley. In fact, he's joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C., not New York. And he's with the ACLU, also with us and joining us by phone, Gregory McNeil. And he's a law professor, Pepperdine University School of Law. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. I do want to get a hobbyist on in just a moment or two, but just a quick question to you, Greg McNeil. Though, is it possible to create laws or even regulations where you can use drones for agriculture or conservation or population management, but have a different set of laws and rules for drones used by law enforcement?
Yes, I think that's a possibility. It's something that that we've seen in some bills, and I think Jay has been, you know, one of the leaders on this, on trying to make sure that if you're going to have rules that govern what the police do, you don't restrict what the people do. I do think the drone sort of fetishism or the focus on drones, if you want to get people together to get advocacy support for a bill, you have to tap their emotions. And oftentimes we see groups trying to make people fearful. What ends up happening when you try and make people fearful of technology is that the technology ends up being banned writ large. And so let me give you a contemporary example that's very problematic. Ferguson. Over Ferguson, what the FAA did was at the request of law enforcement, they established a no-fly zone above the city of Ferguson. That effectively meant that only law enforcement could have their aircraft in the sky. And it banned drones, which aren't going to be flying in the airspace that would affect any other aircraft. They would be flying 50 or 100 feet above the ground. But because the regulations are so broad, it grounded the use of drones by journalists, by activists, by protesters who might want to film what the police were doing to them. And so it's analogous to the circumstances where we saw police taking people's cell phone cameras away to not document government abuses. And so my fear is that by demonizing the technology rather than demonizing the manner in which the technology is used, we run the risk of making sure that the legitimate uses are taken away. And we saw this in a few states. We saw this in Texas, for example, where the Texas legislature basically made it so that you couldn't use a drone to film quote-unquote private property. The North Carolina bill did the same thing. So you couldn't film private property without someone's permission, which all of us think, oh, well, of course I don't want you filming my backyard. But there are activists who want to use drones to fly over industrial facilities to see what pollution is being dumped into the water, to see sort of what types of how animals are being abused and mistreated on farms. And that type of use is now illegal under bills in various states. In fact, the bill that the ACLU of North Carolina supported would basically allow that type of ag-gag law to be put into place that would prohibit the filming of private property. And so and I'm not pointing a finger there. It's actually a very challenging thing to try and draft this legislation that makes carve-outs for the types of uses that we want versus the types of uses that we think are problematic. And so the real focus shouldn't be on the technology. The focus should be on the harm that we're trying to prevent. And that's why I really think a focus on the persistent surveillance versus drones per se is the smarter way to approach this legislative task.
And I got to give you a chance to respond to that. Go ahead, Jay Stanley.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with 90% of what you said. Certainly, we at the ACLU have tried to walk a fine line here because we do not want to see drones used for mass suspicionless surveillance. But at the same time, we're a photographers' rights organization. We're running around the country defending photographers' rights as police seize cameras, order people not to photograph them unconstitutionally, often arrest or harass photographers, as we've seen in Ferguson. We were very concerned about the Ferguson flight ban. It seemed to be pretextual and not safety-based as part of their overall attempt to squelch reporters from covering what was happening there. And so we would like to see the use of drones for First Amendment-protected activity by journalists, by activists wanting to record the police. We would like to see that protected. At the same time, we don't want it used for mass surveillance. And so I think there is a potential for good, subtle drone rules, a regime of rules around this technology that will square all the circles and will cover everything. It may take time for that to evolve. We'll see, you know, the laboratories of democracy, the states, we see a wide variety of legislation. We do have our affiliates in all the states doing their best to push good legislation and to squelch bad legislation like the Texas bill that Greg talked about. Sometimes it's difficult, but we are fighting for drone use by individuals. We think that the individual should have the right to photograph their government, but the government shouldn't be photographing individuals where it doesn't have specific reason to think those individuals are engaged in wrongdoing.
And let me get to Ryan in, and let me say to our third guest waiting in the wings, to LaVon Phillips, we will get to you after a break, which we have in just a couple of minutes. In the meantime, let me get Ryan from Pennsburg to join us. Hi, Ryan. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Ryan. Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
You're
I had a comment on... Yes.
No, go ahead. You're on the air, Ryan. Go ahead. We're all ears.
Yes, thank you so much. Had a comment on... the gentleman made a statement about the state of the technology with the drones, and it's actually quite more advanced presently than he was indicating. Kind of made a statement that like it wouldn't be real practical to go ahead and try to legislate based on this this concept of drones being everywhere and being remotely controlled or whatever, because it's now limited to sort of like one user controlling one drone, and they have to sort of move it around or whatever. But actually, the state of technology is quite more advanced, where you can actually set up a drone to actually... they have this great example where they set it to follow a snowboarder going down a hill and just says, hey, here's your target. I want you to follow behind him at like 15 meters in the air. And you got this guy carving down the mountain, and the drone's just getting this amazing footage of following him down. I mean, that can all be done over a network. It doesn't have to be someone sitting there. So you can sort of imagine this network administrator and some sort of police office just going, hey, dispatch 4 drones to this region and just sort of track, see what's going on. You know, motion detection, image analysis, it's all current. So it's not, the statement is slightly inaccurate as far as the state of the technology.
Well, you know what, Ryan, let me take your comment. And I think that was something that you, well, Greg, I know you have concern that some of these rules or laws or rules, regulations might inhibit the technology. Ryan says it's already pretty sophisticated.
Right. So Ryan's referring to a program that initially started on Kickstarter. The way the drone follows the person is that the drone pairs with the person's cell phone by Bluetooth and follows the person wherever they're going. And so what he's talking about would be dispatching drones from police headquarters to go to a certain area, find someone, and follow someone, which the technology does not currently exist to do that. In fact, I've flown a law enforcement model of one of these. In fact, a very sophisticated one that's a transitional one from the small ones that the military uses. It's a hand-launch aircraft called a Puma. You put it over the sky, and you can touch, for example, on the screen, a vehicle, and the drone would track the vehicle. So long as the vehicle isn't partially obscured by a tree at any point in time. Otherwise, the drone loses its link with the vehicle and then just has to circle. And so, again, I'm saying the technology is further off. But it actually doesn't matter if the technology is here tomorrow, because the concern that the caller is talking about is a persistent surveillance concern, which if you weren't doing it with a drone and you were doing it with GPS, would be unlawful under the Jones case. If you were doing it with manned aircraft, I would start to be concerned when we're following someone over an extended period of time. And if you were doing it with something that wasn't a drone, I would be concerned. And so the caller is talking about persistent surveillance, and that's the type of thing that we should be regulating, not the technology itself.
Ryan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Another short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Greg McNeil and Jay Stanley about drones. And we have another guest waiting in the wings, LaVon Phillips, and he's the founder of the Rotor E Drone Club in New Jersey. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Dell Music Center supports WHYY and presents The Funk Show, featuring Larry Graham, Average White Band, LTD, Lakeside, and the Barkays at the newly renovated Dell Music Center in Fairmount Park on Thursday, August 28th at 7 p.m. These legendary artists will all take the stage for one magical night at the Dell Music Center. Information at mydelleast.com. The Dell Music Center, where the stars take center stage.
Seth Meyers is about to host the Emmys. On the next Fresh Air, we feature an interview with him. He's sat behind the SNL Weekend Update desk. He hosts Late Night on NBC. And he even stood behind the podium at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
One that I imagine if you checked, you'd still see my grip marks in the wood.
Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
We all tend to yawn or laugh when others do. But what is most contagious and hard to get rid of is stress. The emotions of others spread not only through words, but also facial expressions and touch. On this Voices in the Family with Dr. Dan Gottlieb, we'll explore the progression of contagious stress and what we know about it, and we'll hear what we can do to diffuse it from mindfulness expert John Kabat-Zinn, today at noon on WHYY FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moskow, and again, we are talking about some of the security and privacy issues related to the development of domestic drones. Greg McNeil and Jay Stanley are guests, and for a slightly different perspective on the rise of drone hobbyists, we are joined by LaVon Phillips. He's the founder of the Rotor E Drone Club, which is in New Jersey, also CEO and director of the Soha Arts Building and Soha Smart Space for Makers, Artisans, Revolutionists, and Techies, located in Haddon Township, New Jersey. And LaVon Phillips, thanks for joining us, and thanks for your patience as well.
Good morning, and thank you for having me, Marty.
You're very welcome.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Jay and Gregory.
Nice to have you on. And LaVon, when did the Rotor E Drone Club get started?
We started that in late April, May.
Of this year?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's only a few months old.
And what is the appeal, and how many people in the club?
Well, right now we're pushing 50. We have certainly registered 50, and then we always have about 10 to 20 other people that show up that aren't registered, just curious or heard about us through various outlets. So that's how many people we have, and we started it just to have fun, certainly, but we wanted to introduce the community at large to this technology and help them fix things and invent things.
And where do you fly?
Well, generally, we fly anywhere that there's, you know, we're allowed, such as parks and things like that. We'll certainly, you know, connect with farmers and things like that that are friends of ours, and we'll go out and fly in large areas, things like that, because generally you have to have at least a 300-yard radius around where you fly, and we prefer to fly in places with no trees and power lines and things like that.
Can we assume that people that who are members of the club were, remote control airplane hobbyist enthusiasts as well?
A lot of them. I'd say 50% of them, yes. 50% of them are, I mean, we have six-year-olds that are just so curious about it, and they've been playing with their own toys from Radio Shack, and their parents bring them because they want to be connected with them and their children and the future of the drones.
And what's the range of drones in the club?
The range of ages?
I'm thinking about just the size, the style, the shape.
We generally, I mean, none of ours are bigger than a few pounds, like Jay and Gregory had mentioned. I mean, we have them as small as, say, I don't know, a mouse for your computer. We have some very small ones.
Do you think there are, and we're going to be getting back to our guests after we say goodbye to you, LaVon, but do you think there's a need for more regulations for drones and even for drone hobbyists?
Without question. We want the rules, and we want to know what we can and can't do, just like anybody else. I think it's years ago, you can relate it to when cell phones first came out with their cameras. Everybody was like, oh my God, you're going to take a picture of me in public or, you know, when I'm at Starbucks. And there had to be these regulations of all this stuff. And we're still talking about those things.
You think there should be licenses for people that have drones?
Well, we do. All of our members, we have Academy of Model Aeronautics licenses. So we're part of AMA, and they're a big advocate for what we do. And they help us understand rules and legislations. And they're kind of our, I don't know, springboard between us and people like Jay and Gregory.
And what kind of drone do you have?
I have a 3DR Iris that we've changed and manipulated and hacked. We encourage people to buy one that's off the shelf and one that you can kind of just go out and immediately start to play with. And then we teach them to hack it and tweak it and certainly repair it, because everything that goes up must come down.
And maybe perhaps a hard landing sometimes, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Well, on that note, LaVon Phillips, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for being an advocate and speaking about these kind of things. Thank you.
You're welcome. And he's the founder of the Rotor E Drone Club, which is in New Jersey. Getting back to our other guests, Jay Stanley, again, Senior Policy Analyst with the ACLU Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project, and Gregory McNeil, Law Professor, Pepperdine University School of Law, carrying on our conversation, talking about some of the security and surveillance and privacy issues related to the development of domestic drones. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Greg, from what you heard from LaVon, I mean, you know, these are enthusiasts. These are people that like hacking into drones and creating something new and original.
Yes, the amazing thing about this is that it's really enabled a community of people to take very simple technology that's been around for decades, which are model aircraft, connect a cell phone to it, or the parts of a cell phone, so you have GPS technology, and then figure out how to fly this thing in a safe way. One of the best examples of this is a group out of Texas called Texas Equisearch that had previously done search and rescue missions looking for lost children on horseback. And one day they decided that the best way to get a view of an area was to put a remote control airplane in the sky and look over the fields where they were looking for missing people. And they have found missing people that that were just a few feet from where rescuers were, but the rescuers couldn't see the missing people because of bushes or because of shrubs or trees. And so they have this history of being able to effectively do it. And because our regulatory scheme is so bizarre, the way the FAA is developing it, that the FAA would say to this group, it is unlawful for you to fly a drone for search and rescue purposes. However, if you were to go fly in a field and do loops and fly it for fun, that's okay. In fact, the FAA issued a regulatory document that said, it had two columns, it said if you're flying a model airplane to take pictures of your farm for your hobby, that's okay. But if you're flying a model aircraft over a farm to take pictures, for example, to make sure you're not using too many pesticides, the FAA says that's unlawful. And it has nothing to do with safety. It just has to do with these weird lines they've drawn in their legislation between commercial uses and hobbyist uses. And it's the type of thing that, for example, Amazon said in their letter to the FAA, we are considering taking our technology to another country to develop it because the FAA is dragging its feet and not allowing them to develop their delivery technology.
Jay, you want to weigh in on that, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Yeah, I mean, I think the FAA has been in for a lot of criticism for those rules, but change is in the works. They've been ordered by Congress by September 2015 to finalize new rules. I think they're probably going to miss that deadline, but eventually we are going to get new rules, permitting commercial use of drones. And just to make a comment on one thing that Greg said, I think he makes a really good point that about regulating surveillance, not a particular technology. And, of course, I agree with that on the level that ideally, we would love to see broad regulations that cover all surveillance technologies, whether it's GPS or phone tracking or what have you. But if you go to state legislatures, and we have our lobbyists in state legislatures try and put forth a very, very broad surveillance bill like that right now, it's not going to go anywhere. We're fighting a large-scale war here over surveillance and privacy. And right now, we have an opportunity to get in place some rules around drones because there is so much public interest and fascination mm-hmm. with drones. And so we are pushing forward on that front. And I think that over time, the rules for drones will broaden to cover other technologies. Certainly, we would love to see them cover surveillance on cell phones and helicopters and so forth. But you have to fight the battles that you can at the time that you can in this broad war over to protect our privacy and our way of life.
And it sounds like, I do want to get to our callers, Jay, but at least from the ACLU's perspective, this is a state-by-state fight, to use your words.
Yeah, there has been legislation proposed in Congress on privacy in drones. It hasn't gone anywhere yet, but obviously we'd love to see something at the federal level, but yes, right now we're fighting this in the state by state, with our lobbyists in state legislatures around the country.
Let me get Ken from Doylestown to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Ken, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. My concerns are revolving around not the designated operator of the drone, but someone, say, spoofing the signal. The technology is still relatively new in terms of getting out there, so that a lot of the, from what I gather, a lot of the software is based on just being able to run it and, you know, make sure I'm not crossing signals with anyone. But like when cell phones were first coming out and they had Bluetooth, all of a sudden you had people able to spoof someone's phone from across the room. So what, you know, where do things stand on securing the drones so that
sure.
the user is locked in
and no one else can get in there?
The data.
Yeah, Ken, let me see what Greg McNeil has to say. Greg, go ahead.
So you know, that the ability to spoof the cheaper ones has been around for a long time. Even the military ones, for a period of time, were not using encrypted uplinks. But the FAA subcommittee that's addressing this issue specifically has that as a task item that they're going to put into the regulations. So before an Amazon drone will ever fly to deliver packages, it will have a secure encrypted uplink that will prevent people from being able to hack it. And if people were somehow able to hack it, the FAA would come after them. By the way, this is a similar problem with our air traffic control system, too, with manned aircraft. So they're talking about levels of encryption that would be comparable to what we would have for manned aircraft. And so if someone were able to hack the drone using that level of encryption, they would be able to do it for manned aircraft. And so it's not a drone-specific issue that the caller is talking about. But I agree it is a concern and one that's worthy of regulation, at least for large systems. When you're talking about a 2-pound aircraft, if somebody's hacking a 2-pound aircraft, the harm from that is so minimal that it's unlikely we're going to require encryption for something that small.
Jay, we have a Facebook comment for you from Carol. How do I find out what my township or my town or my city's policy on drones is? Can you just call up and find out, or is it more complicated than that?
We have pages online that show the status of state legislation, state by state. We have a map, and we have sort of charts showing the status of the legislation. There haven't been as many towns taking action. There have been some. We don't trace that, but you know, most towns have not done anything yet. But yeah, I would call your local officials.
Greg, there was an interesting piece, actually it was in the New York Times today, an editorial about the National Park Service has banned drones in the country's national parks. They have concerns about noise and about safety for people and also for animals. I'd be curious about what you make of that. I think it's sort of an unofficial ban, but it's apparently in effect.
Yeah, I wrote a few stories at Forbes about this and the development of it as it initially happened. So what's sort of troubling is initially what the Park Service did was it was going around fining people for using drones, and the drones people were using, you could also just think of them as remote control or model aircraft. And it was fining them, but there was no regulation that actually allowed them to fine them, so they were taking a broad interpretation of a regulation that on any plain reading of it would not reach model aircraft. It was for like ultralights and things, you know, like parachute based jumpers. And this sounds like not a big deal, right? We're all thinking like a fine, it's like a traffic ticket. One person was fined $300, doesn't sound like much, and he said, he went to challenge it, and he said, I don't think that there's a law that supports this. And the U.S. attorney for Arizona emailed him back and said, sure, if you want to challenge it, you can, but I just want you to know it's going to convert from a civil penalty to a federal misdemeanor penalty, and if you lose, you're going to spend 6 months in jail, and it'll be a $3,000 fine. And so you think for flying a remote-controlled foam airplane that weighs 4 pounds. And so this thing sort of blew up as the Park Service was rightly concerned about, you know, animals and, you know, people crashing into the Grand Canyon and noise. But the problem was they didn't do what governments are supposed to do, which is actually follow the law and promulgate rules. So just a few months ago, about a month and a half ago, they issued a rule that said we're going to temporarily ban them until we develop some new rules. That's actually a good approach, right? So if you're going to ban them, do it temporarily until you can figure out some rules that work for everyone. Because we might not want to ban drones completely in parks. You might want to have people have permits. You might want to say, let's capture some of this stunning HD video to bring people into the park system. We might want to use it for scientific or research purposes, or we might want to have designated areas, which currently exist in parks, designated areas for people to fly remote control aircraft or drones, as we would call them. And so I think the Park Service, after some stumbles, did the right thing by moving slowly, and hopefully they'll create some regulations that, that balance photographers' rights to document the beauty of our parks, along with the rights of individuals to enjoy the parks in sort of quiet solitude.
Jay, we're almost out of time here, but you talked about the need for some subtle lawmaking. Doesn't feel like we're in a particularly subtle time in this country's history, but nonetheless, I'm going to pick up on that with you. So can we come up with something that allows people the kind of freedom and joy that it sounds like associated with some of the drone use, but also protect people's privacy and from an overly intrusive government?
Yeah, I think there's no reason we can't do that. It's really amazing to see this technology and on the internet and the huge outpouring of human creativity that's taking place around it. And we're going to see some really, really cool uses of it. We're going to see useful uses of it. But we're also going to see some scary stuff. There was a guy who posted a video. He attached a paintball gun to a drone and flew it around and actually was able to hit targets with a paintball gun. And so, you know, squaring that circle requires putting in place some good rules around law enforcement and government use now, because we know that the police historically have always overused surveillance, especially when it's cheap and easy to do, and they will do it. At least some departments will do it if we don't put in place laws. But when it comes to the private sector use, we need to go slowly, take a little bit of a wait-and-see attitude. I think there will be privacy problems that come from the private sector use, but we need to go slowly there and let them emerge and react them carefully, as opposed to a proactive approach when it comes to the law enforcement side.
Well, you both have given us a lot to think about. Jay Stanley, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me
on. You're welcome. And Gregory McNeil, thank you very much as well.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. Greg McNeil, a law professor, Pepperdine University School of Law, and a contributor to Forbes. Jay Stanley, senior policy analyst with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project, also editor of the ACLU's Free Future blog. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.